discovery of the very high energy cosmological neutrino. So it's my pleasure to welcome Professor Francis Hudson here, and please come here.
And Professors Matejev and Olszewski. Shall I use the microphone?
Yeah.
I thank you very much for this unexpected honor. I was very pleased to hear about this and thank the committee. I would like to tell those of you who don't know about IceCube about the experiment and give a quick introduction. I'm going to give a quick overview. And those of you who heard me talk about this experiment before always realize that I showed this slide. It's not for the occasion. I always show this slide in my talk, and I often make the joke that this man had all the ideas in neutrino physics, except this one, Markov's idea in 1960, to find a way to build large neutrino detectors using a natural medium like water as a Cherenkov detector. The idea is presented in a cartoon here. You look for particles coming through the Earth, which can only be neutrinos. If it's a muon neutrino and it interacts below or in your detector, it makes a muon. At TeV energy, this muon has a range of kilometers. And so you can detect it by just filling a large volume of water with photomultipliers, and you have a classic Cherenkov detector. This was tried a long time ago, starting in the 70s, off the coast of Hawaii. Unfortunately, this pioneering experiment developed lots of the ideas, but it failed. Of course, you all know about the experiment in Lake Baikal that succeeded and actually managed to observe the first atmospheric neutrinos, which showed the technique actually worked. And the Hawaii technique, which failed at the time, was revived by the Antares experiment, which has now taken data like for 15 years and has proven that this technique can actually work and will lead to two big detectors in the Mediterranean in the near future. You already realize that this topic has a long Russian Soviet history, but the real first time I heard about kilometer cube detector was a paper in 1969 by Zatsepin and Berezinski, who did a simple calculation. This is the light in the interstellar medium, which is of course dominated. This is the gamma ray flux, this is the microwave background, and this of course at high energy cosmic rays dominate the radiation from the universe. Zatsepin and Berezinski calculated the probability that an extragalactic cosmic ray, the highest energy cosmic rays, that it interacts with a microwave photon and... they, of course, both fill the universe. So occasionally they are going to meet and produce a pion, and the pion decays into a neutrino. And they calculated at the time that if you build a fully efficient kilometer cube detector, that was the implication of their result, you would see one neutrino per year. We should have seen between 5 and 10 now, and we have not. But I think we know why. There's physics behind that. It has to do with the composition of the highest energy cosmic rays. Now, a lot of calculations were done on interesting topics like galactic supernova explosions, gamma ray bursts. Here is the Zatsepin calculation, Berezinski calculation. And so what this slide shows is that you can see 10 to 100 events from objects like this if you build such a detector. Of course, the bad news is that below 100 TeV, the sky is dominated by atmospheric neutrinos. You see nothing. You just have this cloud of atmospheric neutrinos above you. Personally, I began to think about Ice Cube, or at that time it was called Amanda, when I read this paper by Zeleshnik, who was trying to build a radio detector. Neutrinos interacting in ice emit Cherenkov radiation, which you can detect by dipoles. This idea goes back to Ascari in 1965. And I was interested in this particular experiment, and we actually calculated the power of emitted by the neutrino, the power in the shower produced, the radio shower produced by the neutrino, and realized that this experiment could actually be done in practice. And but for some reason, we abandoned radio and went back to photomultiplier tubes and did instead try to build an experiment at the South Pole. This is a science station at the South Pole. This is South Pole. This is the construction of Ice Cube of many years ago. And the key is, of course, we did a test and found that below 1.35 kilometers, there are no bubbles in ice, and you have a very clear, transparent medium to build a Cherenkov detector. So when you now go 1.5 kilometers deep, you find a kilometer cube of ice below the NSF station, instrumented with more than 5,000 10-inch photomultipliers. So that's the idea again. There is an air shower array at the top for calibration. And so you have just 5,160 PMTs spread in a kilometer cube deployed on 86 strings. So this is the workhorse. It's a 20 centimeter photomultiplier, more than 5,000 of them. And they are instrumented with electronics. So the signals from the photomultiplier get captured in the ice, digitized, and then the whole experiment is purely digital. There's nothing else to it but computers. So if you could go in the experiment, you would find these strings with 60 photomultipliers, and 125 meters away, there's another string, and 125 meters, another one, and 86 of those fill a kilometer cube. We detect 3,000 muons every second. But these, of course, come from the atmosphere. They are cosmic ray muons. We detect 100,000 atmospheric neutrinos per year, and we now know we detect 120 cosmic new mus per year, as I will explain in a minute. We discovered these already in four different ways, which I will illustrate now. This is the classic original suggestion. You see a muon that comes through the Earth from 11 degrees below the horizon, and with an energy on the order of 9,000 TeV, it cannot be atmospheric. The atmosphere doesn't produce these muons. So this event by itself is almost a 5 sigma discovery. And of course, by now we have discovered many of these. So the event deposits 2,600 TeV of energy inside the detector. And so the original neutrino energy can be estimated by standard model physics in somewhere between 5 and 10 PeV. We actually recently, in the last month, discovered an event which has an energy of more than 10,000 PeV, and that's a 5 sigma discovery with one event. Of course, we can also see electron neutrinos, but only if they interact inside the detector. So this is an electron neutrino of just over 1,000 TeV, and it makes an electromagnetic shower, which has the size of this room, but in a kilometer cube detector, that's a point source of light, which is exactly what you look for. But it's a full absorption calorimeter. So we know the energy, and we are sure that this energy is too high to be produced in the atmosphere. So, stuck. Can I advance here? Ah, yeah. So we have now measured the flux of cosmic neutrinos two ways. This is the fit to the muon data coming through the Earth, and this is the measurement of the electron and tau neutrinos. And so you see these two are completely consistent, and so they have predicted close to e to the minus 2 energy dependence. If they come from cosmic sources, we have to see equal nu e, nu mu, nu tau. They have oscillated to equal flavors, and so this is indeed what we measure. And so we are actually measuring neutrino oscillations at 1,000 TeV. So this is a unique opportunity to detect new neutrino physics, and we are actually upgrading the experiment to do this measurement much better. We have seen tau neutrinos, which by itself is also discovery of cosmic neutrinos, and you see the digitized waveforms are critical here. You don't actually see the tau in this event, but you have to realize the tau that at Fermilab, when new tau was discovered, had a track length of 1 millimeter in emulsions, has here a track length of 17 meters in this event. And you see in this particular photomultiplier, you see the light produced when the tau interacts and when it decays. And there are some hundred photomultipliers in this event which you can fit. Finally, so the last way we managed to discover cosmic neutrinos is by actually seeing what's called the Glashow event. And it's where an anti-electron neutrino interacts not with a nucleus, with an atomic electron, and produce two jets from the decay of real W. So the cosmic neutrino of 6.3 PeV, 6,300 TeV, makes a real W on a cosmic neutrino. And here is the event, and you can here see the energy measurement, which is exciting particle physics result. For us, it was exciting because we checked the calibration of the detector in a dramatic way. We'll hopefully get more events like this. So what did we learn from all this? We learned that, you know, there is neutrino astronomy, but it was very difficult to do. After 10 years of data, our map looks like this, and the hottest spot is a known active galaxy, but it's only after trials, a 3 sigma evidence. It's not a discovery. So we started doing something totally different. In the last 3 years, whenever we see a neutrino like this that is likely to be cosmic, we send the coordinates to all the astronomers in the world over a telegram. This is done by the computers at the South Pole in less than 1 minute. There is no human control over it. And we send about 10 of these a year, now more. And so that gave us our big breakthrough. The one I just showed in 2017 pointed within 0.06 degrees at a galaxy that had been flaring. It's an active galaxy. The power for accelerating particles comes from a rotating black hole. And it had increased its output by a factor 7 in a few months. So the chance this is an accident is 1 in 1,000, so be it. What's interesting is what followed afterwards. We actually, magic detector, saw TV, under GV gamma rays. We now know that this source is 4 billion light years away. So these are actually TV gamma rays at the source. So this is much less likely already. But the big breakthrough too came was now when you know where to look, we can go and look in 10 years of our own data. Of course, this source was studied by, at some point, 22 telescopes were looking at this source at the same time. And so a wealth of data. And it's not surprising, astronomers thought this was a blazar, a jet pointing at us from an active galaxy. And all blazars models failed to explain this data. And when we look back at our last 10 years of data, by the way, this is what I've been talking about. This is what we found in our data in 2014. 13 neutrinos in 3 months. No theorist had ever predicted this. And, you know, models already failed at explaining this one neutrino in 2017. What about 13 in 3 months in 2014? And the chance that this was accidental was very small. The chance is a fluctuation is 2 times 10 to the minus 5. And in fact, we find a spectrum of e to the minus 2.1. So it's totally consistent with a source. And this is the excitement, the radio experiment that recently mapped the black hole. Some of them, the European ones actually, started to make a high-resolution image of this detector, of this accelerator, and found that actually it was not a blazar, it are 2 galaxies that are merging. And that perfectly gives you the physics to explain our events. So this only happened in the last few months, so I have no follow-up on this, but this is a totally new information about this source. And of course, we have evidence for an event at the end of July that may be a second example of this. So this is a rapidly evolving field. And so the only thing I can tell you, stay tuned. And I want to close by, obviously I didn't do this by myself. We put together in Madison an incredible group of people held by scientists in Sweden and Germany, DAISY Laboratory, and Belgium. We put together a crew that built this detector, and that was an incredible performance, except especially the drilling, which took 86 attempts to drill a hole without ever having a failure. But of course, on what I told you more recently, is the scientific collaboration that should get the credit. And I want to close by showing their picture during a collaboration meeting in Berlin. And once more, it's a real pleasure for me to, and would like to thank you again, the council and the committee who selected me. It's a real honor to receive this prize. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Hazen, for this very excellent presentation. Are there some questions? Or please.
I'm curious, how do you calibrate your detector, IceCube?
Very good question. And I showed the critical slide. I won't go back to it. We measure the atmospheric neutrino flux over many orders of magnitude. And that's the calibration from the detector. So by the time you come to 100 TeV, where it's important to be able to tell atmospheric from cosmic neutrinos, you have a well-calibrated instrument. And of course, that we got our calibration right was shown by this 6,300 TeV real W, which we found at exactly the right energy.
Boris, please.
What kind of complementary information could be obtained from the Baikal GVD?
Well, I understand the experiment is on its way to measure the same flux we measure. And of course, if I would have gone into the details, measuring this flux is really difficult. It's easy to discover and show you events. Measuring the flux in detail, I didn't address. It has been a challenge to actually make the two measurements, the events starting in the detector and the events coming through the Earth, to make them match to the same spectrum. And they are consistent, but we actually suspect that there is structure in this spectrum. And so as soon as someone else, and probably be late by Carl, can measure this flux, we'll get totally complementary observation using different techniques. This will be fantastic.
Professor Halsen, first, my wholehearted congratulations to the prize. Very well deserved, of course. Beth, I have a question to your last event. If you have 17 neutrinos from such a large distance, galaxy going into galaxy wouldn't do it. It must be that the active nucleus hits the other active nucleus, means that a huge black hole hits another huge black hole. Yeah. Or is there anything else which could produce
No,
this?
We, of course, we have already done these calculations. You know, we can do this on the back of an envelope. And you see what was missing in a blazar. A blazar emits high-energy photons, so it's a transparent source. There is no target to make neutrinos.
It would be
so
3 months.
So theorists could not make the one neutrino in 2017. We believe that had to be a fluctuation. Now, the picture of the VLBA actually shows that two jets are merging. And so now you have additional target. But the other possibility is, when two galaxies merge, you have, at low angular momentum, you have lots of mass accumulating. And it may be that the accelerator just produced the neutrinos there. We need more information. But, you know, now, you know, this was an experiment, that an observation that was not confirmed by theory. But after this, it's confirmed by theory. The details are still missing, of course.
Thank you.
There is another question here, please.
Did you measure any candidate neutrino in coincidence with gravitational waves in Ice Cube or in any other neutrino experiment?
Yeah.
Do you expect some?
Well, if we expect some is a hard question. If we have been looking is the easy one. We have been looking since the very, very early LIGO-Virgo observations, even before the breakthrough with the binary black hole. So we've been matching our data in real time recently and offline on the old data. So we are looking. Now, of course, black hole mergers, there's no target. It's related to the previous question. But we have now been, of course, neutron star mergers. There's no doubt there are protons accelerated. And so there, you expect neutrinos. How many? Well, it's astrophysics as usual, right? You make predictions, and you can make optimistic predictions or pessimistic predictions. And by the optimistic predictions, We should have seen the neutron star merger, the one that has been seen, except the jet was not pointing at us. According to the pessimistic predictions, the next generation detector, like the full KM3 net and the next generation ISQ, should be able to see neutron star mergers.
I see no other questions, so thank you very much again for this fascinating insight into physics. The next step of our program is the awarding of the prizes. So Professor Matveev, our director, will lead this.
Thank you. Dear colleagues, after the election of the director of the Laboratory of Radiation Biology, we should announce the vacancies of positions of deputy directors of this laboratory. So, according to the regulations, the endorsement of the appointments will take place at the next session of the Scientific Council in February of 2020. I propose to include this announcement in the resolution of the Scientific Council. Thank you.
Thank you. So we can go over to the ceremony.
Yes.
So please.
Let me just read GNR prizes for 2018. In field of theoretical physics, second prize for the series of paper description of low energy meson production and colliding E plus E minus beams, and in case of tau leptons within the extended number Yonah-Lozinian model, to Mikhail Volkov. Андрей Арбузов.
Большое спасибо. Я очень благодарен. В этом году исполняется 60 лет моей работы в этом институте. Давайте три премии я уже перед этим получил. Четвертая премия особенно дорога, как награда вот за то, что эти 60
Андрей Арбузов. And Канат Нурлан. First prize in the field of theoretical physics for the series of paper Multidimensional Supersymmetric Mechanics is awarded to Sergei Krivonos. Антон Сутулин. In the field of experimental physics, for the series of paper study in PP chain solar neutrino properties with a Bruksine detector, Вишнева, Смирнов, and Сотников. And for the serious paper, correlation of structure and physical properties in ordered iron-based alloys, to Balagurov, Bobrikov. And Sumnikov. Second prize in the field of experimental physics research for the series of paper manifestation of the cluster structure of beryllium nuclei in mechanism of their interaction. To Andrei Denikin, Vladimir Maslov, Mikhail Naumenko, Кайрат Мединбаев and Николай Скобелев. In the field of physics instruments and methods, for the experiment Akulina 2 project, the physics case and technical challenges, to Besbach, Alexander Besbach, Alexander Gorshkov, Сергей Крупко, Сергей Сидорчук, Сергей Степанцов, Гурген Терракопьян, Андрей Фомичев, Фомичев, и Павел Шаров. In the field of applied physics research, first prize for the experiment and structure and properties of aqueous solutions for carbon and carbon fullerenes for biological applications. To Mikhail Avdeev, Елена Кузима, Виктор Петренко, Александр Иваньков, и Леонид Булавин. Second prize for this series of research, determination of the element content of Moldovan vines and soils by neutron activation analysis, to Inga Zenevtsova, Oh.
Зиняковская.
Всем желаю больших успехов.
Инга Зиняковская. Атилия Куликов. Марина Фронтасьева. Светлана Гундорина. An encouraging prize for the research, discovery and properties of investigation of transitional dynamics in three-body decay of exotic nuclei to Pavel Sharov. Last one for research position sensitive to wind ionization chamber for nuclear fission investigations to Shakir Zeynalov. Ольга Сидорова. And Павел Седышев. Laureate, I invite it for the group photo, please. Сейчас будет групповая фотография вообще. Пожалуйста. За групповой фотографией.
Первая премия.
Да. Тамара Дмитриевна, еще одна премия осталась.
They have forgotten first prize. One first prize. Our tradition group.
Пожалуйста.
Да-да, фотография. Сейчас, секундочку.
Там тоже можно. Нестеренко, Рейнхард, Квасик.
Извините, я не знаю.
Excuse me, there is technical. Was technical problem.
Первая премия присуждается Валентину Олеговичу Нестеренко за работу «Вихревые возбуждения в ядрах». Очень важная тема. Поздравляю вас.
сказала, да.
Dear members of the Scientific Council, now we will take a break of 1 hour for the reception, and we meet again at 1 o'clock. Enjoy the reception.
So, Catalina, 1 o'clock back? We shall be 1 o'clock here back.